Hubble's Law. By analysing the light from other galaxies, Edwin Hubble discovered in the 1920s that nearly all galaxies are moving away from us at a velocity, v, that is proportional to their distance, r, from the Earth. So, v equals h times r. This important observation, known as Hubble's Law, established that the universe is expanding, with the Hubble constant h setting the rate of expansion. The Doppler effect. The relationship between speed and wavelength, which is called the Doppler effect, is an everyday experience. Listen to a plane that passes overhead. As it approaches, its engine sounds at a higher pitch, and when it passes and disappears, it sounds at a lower pitch. The higher pitch corresponds to sound waves with a shorter wavelength, the distance between one wave crest and the next, and a higher frequency, the number of waves per second. This is because as the plane moves toward you, it will be nearer to you when it emits the next wave crest, lessening the distance between wave crests. Similarly, as the plane moves away, the wavelengths increase and the pitch you perceive is lower. The Doppler effect is also true of light waves. If a galaxy were to remain at a constant distance from Earth, characteristic lines in the spectrum would appear in a normal or standard position. However, if the galaxy is moving away from us, the waves will appear elongated or stretched. And if the galaxy is moving towards us, then the waves will appear to be compressed. The discovery of the expansion of the universe was one of the great intellectual revolutions of the 20th century. It came as a total surprise, and it completely changed the discussion of the origin of the universe. If the galaxies are moving apart, they must have been closer together in the past. From the present rate of expansion, we can estimate that they must have been very close together indeed, 10 to 15 billion years ago. As described in the last chapter, Roger Penrose and I were able to show that Einstein's general theory of relativity implied that the universe and time itself must have had a beginning in a tremendous explosion. Here was the explanation of why the sky at night is dark. No star could have been shining longer than 10 to 15 billion years, the time since the Big Bang. The Hot Big Bang. If general relativity were correct, the universe started with an infinite temperature and density at the Big Bang singularity. As the universe expanded, the temperature of the radiation decreased. At about a hundredth of a second after the Big Bang, the temperature would have been 100 billion degrees, and the universe would have contained mostly photons, electrons, and neutrinos, extremely light particles, and their antiparticles, together with some protons and neutrons. For the next 3 minutes, as the universe cooled to about 1 billion degrees, protons and neutrons would have begun combining to form the nuclei of helium, hydrogen, and other light elements. Hundreds of thousands of years later, when the temperature had dropped to a few thousand degrees, the electrons would have slowed down to the point where the light nuclei could capture them to form atoms. However, the heavier elements of which we are made, such as carbon and oxygen, would not form until billions of years later from the burning of helium in the center of stars. This picture of a dense, hot, early stage of the universe was first put forward by the scientist George Gamow in 1948, in a paper he wrote with Ralph Alpha, which made the remarkable prediction that radiation from this very hot early stage should still be around today. Their prediction was confirmed in 1965 when the physicists Arno Penzias and Robert Wilson observed the cosmic microwave background radiation. We're used to the idea that events are caused by earlier events, which in turn are caused by still earlier events. There's a chain of causality stretching back into the past. But suppose this chain has a beginning. Suppose there was a first event. What caused it? This was not a question that many scientists wanted to address. They tried to avoid it, either by claiming, like the Russians, that the universe didn't have a beginning, or by maintaining that the origin of the universe didn't lie within the realm of science but belonged to metaphysics or religion. In my opinion, this is not a position any true scientist should take. If the laws of science are suspended at the beginning of the universe, might not they fail at other times also? A law is not a law if it only holds sometimes. We must try to understand the beginning of the universe on the basis of science. It may be a task beyond our powers, but we should at least make the attempt. While the theorems that Penrose and I proved showed that the universe must have had a beginning, they didn't give much information about the nature of that beginning. They indicated that the universe began in a Big Bang, a point where the whole universe and everything in it was scrunched up into a single point of infinite density. At this point, Einstein's general theory of relativity would have broken down, so it can't be used to predict in what manner the universe began. One is left with the origin of the universe apparently being beyond the scope of science. This was not a conclusion that scientists should be happy with. As chapters 1 and 2 point out, the reason general relativity broke down near the Big Bang is that it didn't incorporate the uncertainty principle, the random element of quantum theory that Einstein had objected to on the grounds that God does not play dice. However, all the evidence is that God is quite a gambler. One can think of the universe as being like a giant casino, with dice being rolled or wheels being spun on every occasion. You might think that operating a casino is a very chancy business, because you risk losing money each time dice are thrown or the wheel is spun. But over a large number of bets, the gains and losses average out to a result that can be predicted, even though the result of any particular bet cannot be predicted. The casino operators make sure the odds average out in their favour. That's why casino operators are so rich. The only chance you have of winning against them is to stake all your money on a few rolls of the dice or spins of the wheel. It's the same with the universe. When the universe is big, as it is today, there are a very large number of rolls of the dice, and the results average out to something one can predict. That's why classical laws work for large systems. But when the universe is very small, as it was near in time to the Big Bang, there are only a small number of rolls of the dice, and the uncertainty principle is very important. Because the universe keeps on rolling the dice to see what happens next, it doesn't have just a single history, as one might have thought. Instead, the universe must have every possible history, each with its own probability. There must be a history of the universe in which Belize won every gold medal at the Olympic Games, though maybe the probability is low. This idea that the universe has multiple histories may sound like science fiction, but it is now accepted as science fact. It was formulated by Richard Feynman, who was both a great physicist and quite a character. Feynman's stories. Born in Brooklyn, New York, in 1918, Richard Feynman completed his PhD under John Wheeler at Princeton University in 1942. Shortly afterward, he was drawn into the Manhattan Project. He was known for both his exuberant personality and practical jokes. At the Los Alamos labs, he enjoyed cracking the top-secret safes. And for being an exceptional physicist. He became a key contributor to atomic bomb theory. Feynman's perpetual curiosity about the world was the very root of his being. It was not only the engine for his scientific success, it led him to numerous astonishing exploits, such as deciphering Mayan hieroglyphics. In the years following World War II, Feynman found a powerful new way of thinking about quantum mechanics, for which he was awarded the Nobel Prize in 1965. He challenged the basic classical assumption that each particle has one particular history. Instead, he suggested that particles travel from one location to another along every possible path through space-time. With each trajectory, Feynman associated two numbers, one for the size, the amplitude, of a wave, and one for its phase, whether it's at a crest or a trough. The probability of a particle going from A to B is found by adding up the waves associated with every possible path that passes through A and B. Nevertheless, in the everyday world, it seems to us that objects follow a single path between their origin and their final destination. This agrees with Feynman's multiple history idea, because for large objects, his rule for assigning numbers to each path ensures that all paths but one cancel out when their contributions are combined. Only one of the infinity of paths matters as far as the motion of macroscopic objects is concerned, and this trajectory is precisely the one emerging from Newton's classical laws of motion.